Hello and welcome back to the Cricket Stats Scholar podcast with me, Dane, and of course, Guy Walker. Guy, mate, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Dane. It's great to be back, mate. How are you going?
Yeah, good, mate. Finally sort of dealt with and processed the series loss to an excellent Indian side. Just before we jump into that, today is Friday, 12 February. So straight away, Guy, Day five, Sydney, and day five, Brisbane. What could have been better in your eyes?
Yeah, I don't know, mate. I think it's I think obviously the Australians, they had a crack, but India, I think there has to be a lot of credit given to India. There's always someone standing up, whether that was Ashwin and Vihari or Washington Sundar. Like, they just showed more fight than any other Indian team I think we've ever seen. So we probably didn't bowl that well. You'd probably expect Nathan Lyon to bowl a little bit better and take more wickets. But saying that, they did well. What do you think the Indians did well, and what do you think the Australians could have done better?
Look, as an Australian fan, of course, I was frustrated and flustered and disappointed in our boys. But like you said, I don't want any of that to mask the fact that India was simply sensational. The amount of crazy stuff they went through in the series with losing Virat Kohli, you know, little known player called Virat Kohli. And that was just the start of the avalanche of injuries and issues that they faced throughout the series, getting knocked for 36. And just to come back, and the nature of the draws and the victories that they forged were just jaw-dropping. Like, I mean, upon reflection, and now that the dust has settled a little bit for me, what Pant did on that fifth day at the Gabba was just incredible. And I really am saddened that we didn't get the win, but you got to give full credit to India, don't you?
I think so, mate. Like, if you actually sum up the series, you look at it, it went from test match one, India bowled out for 36, absolute dark day in Indian history, to end up winning a test match series in Australia, and they lost their best player in the world after the first test match. Oh. And they had injuries to all their bowlers. And if you look at it, we pretty much played an Indians third team. So their fight and grit and the way that they came back and won that series was commendable. And like you said, it's pretty sad day for Australian cricket, because you would have expected us to win that test series.
Well, exactly. The data and everything suggested as much. And I suppose that's what makes cricket so incredible and at times frustrating. Very quickly, I just want your a little one-pager on Mitch Stark as the series progressed. Is there anything in your mind that might be done in the future to better manage a player like Starkey?
It is hard, because the players are playing so much these days and they're bowling so much. So, and people don't understand as well sometimes that coming from a lot of white ball cricket to play test match cricket is a really hard thing to do, especially for the bowlers. You've got to bowl the first class length, and you've got to really change up your lengths and lines. But yeah, I don't know. I think out of all the Australian bowlers, he probably looked the least dangerous. I think they probably got the best use out of him by bowling him in four or five over spells, trying to just say, bowl fast, try and take wickets. But I don't know. I don't know, mate. I don't know what the answer is with Stark. Like, you look at Hazelwood and Cummins, you just see three absolute guns and two absolute guns. So, yeah, I don't know. What's your thoughts with him?
Well, we'll talk about some stats that have been doing the rounds lately in a moment. But I think the fundamental issue that we had is that we didn't bowl to hit the wickets at all often. Like, a vast majority of deliveries weren't hitting the stumps, and a vast majority of deliveries were up around the throats of the batsmen. And I get the need to create an intense sort of environment of intimidation or keeping the players on the back foot or not sure, but at the end of the day, when you check, like, we had stacks of runs to play with, we needed wickets. I think just everyone needed to bowl at the stumps more. Before we dive into the Stark matter and dig into his numbers a little bit, Nathan Lyon had a pretty poor series by his standards. And certainly when you compare the spinners from India, so Ravi Jadeja, 7 wickets at 15, a wicket every 32 balls. Ashwin, 12 wickets at 28, a wicket every 67 balls, but bowled very economically, 2.57 and over. And even Washington Sundar, 4 wickets on debut for the match, was a little bit more expensive, but he took wickets, I suppose. Did you notice anything in particular? Like, Lyon didn't particularly look off to me, but I don't know. Was it just he didn't get the rub of the green, or is that letting him off too easily?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit underplayed. I think there was a lot of people talking about Mitch Stark, but I think the difference in the series with the spinners, like you looked at, if you actually look at first innings compared to second innings as well, is that Ashwin Jadeja actually took wickets in the first innings. They were taking 3 and 4 wickets. And we got some wickets as well on day 4 and 5 in Sydney and Brisbane, where it was quite conducive to spin. They'll spin and bounce. But I think it was probably 2 things. He probably didn't bowl as well as he normally would. And they just played him really, really well. I don't know if they had really good plans to win, but Indians tend to play spin better than most other countries in the world. And he's like, they just really neglected his output in the game. And I think that was the difference in the series, is that we didn't have a Nathan Lyon in the second innings take any 4 or 5s and really take the game away from them. The major problem with that is that if Tim Payne had to take Lyon off, that brings Cummins and Stark and Hazelwood back on early, and they're trying to rest, and they bowled a lot of overs in the series. So I honestly think that that's where the series is lost.
100%. I totally agree. I'm a little dark on Nathan for that. Love him as I do generally. 9 wickets at 55.
Yeah.
A wicket every 125 balls. So he's bowling more than 20 overs per wicket.
Yeah. That's shocking, isn't it?
Yeah, that's shocking. 187 overs to take 9 wickets at 55 runs a wicket. Full credit to the Indian spinners. I think we got away lucky in hindsight with a 2-1, because you look at Ashwin out injured, 12 at 28. Who knows what he was capable of in Brisbane? He was getting better and better. Jadeja, he's got to be one of our most Achilles heels type players.
He just doesn't leave the stumps.
No, exactly.
Does not leave the stumps.
The little maniac also topped the averages for the series in Jadeja. 85 runs for once out, hit a 57 and a 28. Critical runs. He's a thorn in our side. So before we get into the Starkey theory, we'll quickly run through some of the standout numbers, first from Australian camp. So the top 3 batsmen for us, insofar as average at least, Marnus, 426 at 53, strike rate of 50, 1 century and 250s. He had a pretty good series, yeah?
He did. Going by numbers, he did. But I don't know. I'm not convinced that he had an amazing series. He got dropped. I think he looked quite average in some of the games that he did get 80s or 100. And I don't know. I think he'd get a really, really good attack with people that can actually field. I don't know if he'll do that well.
Agree. That set of numbers on the paper, they look great, especially against the lineup. But I agree, it's very papered over, all of the dropped opportunities. And I suppose some of the crunch innings that he batted in, where he didn't sort of stand up. Of all the people to critique, I suppose we're just seeking more from Marnus insofar as stability. We're happy that he got the runs, but obviously there's a massive asterisk there, because I think he would have gotten dropped about 7 times throughout the course of his 8 innings, including 4 times at Adelaide, in the space of a 48 run period. So yeah, a little bit ill indicative, I think. So Smudge is next with 313 at 44.7.
Yeah.
Strike rate 51, 1 century and 250s like Marnus, and a duck, his first in ages. How do you reckon Smudger went?
Yeah, I think even though he struggled in some innings, he just, when he's on, isn't he? I think he's still the absolute rock. I think he's still our star performer. And I think the boys sort of, they love him going in because they know that he's going to sort of stick around and get runs. So he probably struggled a bit more, but it just shows that he struggled and he still averaged 44. Like, how good's that? Yeah,
exactly. And 303 runs in his last four innings after a slow start. And look, as the series progressed and as his numbers solidified and as he looked better and better, you realize that how good a player he is, that people were panicking after two quiet tests, 10 runs at 3.3. And that's just the legacy he's carved by sheer weight of runs. So, yeah, he looked very good by the end of the series. So no harm, no foul there. Tim Payne, now we'll talk about his series in three categories. First up, though, 204 runs at 41, strike rate 58. So he actually gave the ball a bit of a battering. A couple of 50s, a crucial one in Adelaide, of course. So batting-wise, pretty sound. Any major notes for his batting performance?
Yeah, underrated again. I think he's it seems like, I think because he's captain, but I think people just have it out for him anyway, don't they? I think all I keep seeing is, even from the Australian public, is how much they don't like him. So I don't know. I think his batting is very underrated, and he's just one of them people that when Australia don't do well, he's sort of the people that people target. Hey,
100%. So I suppose then we'll look at his wicket keeping and. He did have a bad one in the heat of that moment in Sydney. But, I mean, there's an old saying, one swallow doesn't make a summer. And, you know, it was a bad game. And in combination with the rant to Ashwin, which he's come out and apologized for, and him and Ashwin have had a laugh about it. It was just a frustrated bad moment. But, you know, I think if people take a moment to think about their worst week at work when the pressure was on, did they lose it for 5 minutes and go on a rant to one of their colleagues? And when the pressure was on, did they sort of lose their cool, maybe make a few mistakes? I think that you'll find most people, if they're honest, the answer will be, yeah, they've done that as well. I suppose he's under the microscope as the test captain and stuff. And all of the data suggested we should have walked the Sydney test and indeed Brisbane. So I don't mind so much about one bad game with the gloves or even his little 5 minute rant, which he's come out and wholeheartedly apologized for. Is anything to add to that? Are you with regard to his keeping, that is?
I think you summed it up pretty well. I think he had a couple of bad innings, which didn't help. And like we keep pointing on is that people are just looking to target him. So as soon as he sort of falls, that's it. So
you're fine. Yeah.
I probably think that Australia need to start to get Alex Carey in as soon as possible and give the captaincy maybe back to a Smith or whatever. But I think he's done an amazing job, Tim Payne. That's another conversation. But I think you can't really fault him.
No, indeed. So I suppose the third prong to that, and probably something that speaks to the larger series result, a comment that, like, his captaincy and tactics, particularly on days five in Sydney and Brisbane, came under a lot of scrutiny. However, what you find out, well, you know, with regard to the Nathan Lyon thing, Shane Warne in particular went on and on and on and on about it, get a man in close on the offside and stuff like that. And what you find out is that Tim Payne works with Lyon for stuff like that, and Lyon fundamentally doesn't want or like those fielders in there. So I don't know that all of it should rest on Payne's shoulders, but if, you know, given the fact we can now speak in hindsight, what sort of tactical things do you think could have been done to achieve better results on days five in Sydney and the Gabba?
Yeah, I think it's one of them ones that, like, people are like, oh, what tactically should they have done? But it's easy for a Shane Warne to sit up in the grandstand and tell people what to do and all that sort of stuff. And to be honest, I find his commentary extremely annoying. he just goes on and on and on about the same thing. And it's like, hold on, some of the things he talks about, he's so hypocritical as well. So I just think it's one of them, mate. Like, it's like when you got Nathan Lyon averaging 55 with the ball and Stark averaging 40 with the ball and India batting out of their skin, sometimes it's just one of them where it doesn't matter what they do, they just couldn't get the wickets. And that's
I think that's unfortunate. I think you've hit the nail on the head. Yeah, look, there are things we probably could have done, but let's take nothing away from those incredible efforts by India to flatten and rewrite history, like, over and over again. You know, the amount of teams that come back to win a series in Australia after being one down in the first test, you know, all of the players they lost, all of the players they had to keep blooding. Washington Sundar hadn't played a first-class game for like 3 years and was sort of just hanging around for a bio bubble and just, I suppose, for net bowling. And he's come out and had an absolute stunner. And I think we keep seeing rapid evolutions in Indian cricket, and I think we've witnessed another one, which is India have always had great cricketers, and for the last 15 to 20 years, they've had exceptional cricketers, particularly of the batting and spinning variety. But in the last 5 years, they've built this armory of pace that, like, Bhuvneshwar Kumar, I know he's suffered injuries and stuff, but he's a really good player. He's not even on the periphery at the moment. And then let's not even forget about, like, Mohammad Siraj came in green around the ears, personified, ended up sort of, well, he had an excellent series, didn't he? Like, in his three tests, 13 wickets at 29, a wicket every 10 overs. And he has a bit of attitude and stuff. I think the depth is the new thing that will define this next evolution in Indian cricket, which is, yeah, you can take your Kohlis, your Jadejas, your Ashwins, take everything from them. Take 8 of their starting 11 from Adelaide out of this picture, and they will still beat Australia at home, which, you know, it's pretty incredible, isn't it? It's got to be an exciting time to be an Indian fan or indeed cricketer.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? And they've got such a big population and they just keep breeding amazing cricketers. And what they were saying as well is that I was speaking to a couple of the guys that are in the Indian Academy stuff, and they say that Rahul Dravid sort of runs their 19s and academy programs, and they've got an amazing setup going now, and they're their state cricket is really, really strong, and it just breeds good players. And yeah, I don't know. I think sometimes in Australia, I think we just get a bit of the tall poppy syndrome, and we sort of targeted 100%. Tim Payne, who averaged 40 with the bat, and he was okay. And we don't spend time on why did we never hear about David Warner? He averaged 16 with the bat. He couldn't get a run.
Yeah.
And it's almost like they just sort of get away with it a little bit.
Yeah, and completely underdone. I don't understand what the rules are in Australian punditry. And I love Aussie fans, and Aussie fans love their cricket, but it seems a little arbitrary as to who they targeted, because Tim Payne batted at 41 at a scoring rate of 3.5 and over, scored backs to the wall runs, scored consistent runs, and took 17 dismissals in 4 tests, which is, you know, a very good rate. He was still the captain when we knocked him over for 36, and he was still the captain when he hit 73 not out in that very game.
Yeah.
Bush.
Here's one thing, Dane. Why do none of the media, why does no one question Justin Langer? Why on earth did we ever play Joe Burns, a bloke that had 10 innings, that averaged 8 with a bat? And for the whole time, Justin Langer kept saying, oh, he'll play. He's a shoo-in. And it just starts us on the wrong foot. A bloke plays 2 test matches, couldn't get a run again. Why on earth did he get picked at the start? And why on earth did Justin Langer come out and say, David Warner can pretty much pick who he wants to bat with?
Yeah, that was all very strange. And I suppose, like, well, we talked extensively about the Burns factor ahead of the series itself. And we both basically agreed we've got nothing against Joe Burns. He seems like a good cat, but he was in no shape to take on India of all teams. And at that stage, they had an even fitter lineup, so their best lineup. And apart from, you know, a meaningless 51 not out, he scored 12 runs in three bats at four. And that is the exact series he was always going to have.
Exactly. Just setting him up for failure, weren't we? But no one...
Yeah.
I just don't understand why that doesn't get questioned. Why did we play a bloke going into one of our biggest series for the year, averaging 8 from 10 hits, when we could have blooded a Marcus Harris, a Will Pukowski? Like, why wouldn't you go with anyone else?
It's wild.
It is wild.
I don't know. I honestly don't understand some of those decisions. And I can only hope that, because Langer's taken on some feedback lately, and I love Justin Langer, and hopefully he can build from this, because I understand, like, with media training, the need to appear confident and that you've got the backing of your coach. So his rhetoric about Burns being a shoe-in and stuff, I know that was to try and help insulate Burns and give him
front-foot
confidence, but he was in no state, man. Like,
yeah.
There's a limit to that media training where, if anything, that probably put more pressure on Joe Burns.
Yep.
In a roundabout way. That's just my theory. But, like, I'm very conscious of how people speak these days to the media. And to me, that sounded like bluster and bluffery. And, you know, 12 runs in three important innings he played would reinforce that ideal. So we'll quickly skim through, because obviously – it's very easy to talk about Josh Hazlewood, 17 wickets at 19, went at 2.27 and over, a wicket every 51 balls, 17 at 19. And then Paddy Cummins, 21 at 20, going at under 2.6 and over, and a wicket every 46 balls. You know, star-studded, aren't they?
Oh, exactly. And I think looking at them stats there, that you're not going to win many games of test match cricket when you've got two bowlers that average 20 with the ball and you've got two bowlers that average over 40. So I think that's where, like we've said, probably the series was lost in the spin department. And when you've got two blokes that are dominated, they can't bowl. If Paddy Cummins and Josh Hazlewood could have bowled 50 overs each, then we might have won. But unfortunately, you need a little bit more depth than that.
More depth, absolutely. We'll sort of move through, but Matty Wade, 8 innings, 173 runs at 21. Do you reckon that's a permanent red line through his test career?
Unfortunately, I think it is. I think it is. The reason why I say unfortunately, because when he came into bat, he looked more likely to score runs than most of them. He sort of came in and smacked a couple and then just had a little bit of a mind blank and just got out. So I think I think he's old enough now, and I think you've got to probably bring back in Head, or you've got to start to look to the future. And there's a couple of good, I guess, development aspects for the Australians in Cameron Green and Will Pukowski. They did really, really well, and they look like test match cricketers.
Absolutely, yeah. I think poor old Wade, he got himself out a couple of times.
He did.
Did the right thing, batted for the team, batted out of position, tried his guts out. But I think it's just, it's too long now. He's gone under 30 with the bat again.
Yep.
His return since the Ashes is hovering around that 30 flat. He's not one of the best six batsmen in the country anymore. He was 2 years ago when he was knocking runs for fun in all three formats. But sadly, that's faded. And I think so too has his test career. Just quickly on Puck and Cam Green. Thrilled with their performances. Green got better and better and better as he settled. He'll get his first wicket soon enough, but as you've flagged in particular, he's still on sort of some restrictions with bowling, and he's finding his way back in. He'll take a wicket, but 236 runs at 33.7 showed plenty of gears and patience and quality, good technique, all that. And Puck looked awesome on debut. Even his second innings 10, belted a couple of crisp drives.
Yep.
Very exciting for the future for those. We might just jump into the Indian statistics now ahead of the final part, which will be the Mitch Stark conundrum. So Rishabh Pant, for all of the banter and his stump micery, 274 runs at 68.5, scoring at basically 70 runs per 100 balls, which is 4.2 and over. Keeps getting out in the 90s, the cheeky little devil, but what a player in do you have if they can figure out how best to use him?
Exactly. Like I've noticed as well in the England first test match, he's kept still. So I thought they might sort of let him play as just a batter. So,
same.
But it's an amazing, like, I think that's, if you look at their stats there, they've got six blokes that are averaged over 35 for the series. And they've got exactly. guys in there that averaged under 30 with the ball. So, like, if you look at it, I think we had some, as Australian fans, we had some really, really strong performances from Cummins and Hazelwoods and stuff. But we just didn't have enough contribution from the depth of the team. But you look at India, and they've had even blokes like Washington, Shubman Gill, Pant, Jadeja, Kohli, Rahane, even Thakur. Like, they're all averaging above 35. They got seven blokes, like, no wonder they were scoring runs.
Absolutely, mate. And that's exactly that most recent evolution that India have had. And it evolved very quickly, like in a petri dish, some kind of incredible life form. It's the depth thing. You've got kids coming in on debut and they're just like, yeah, we don't care if it's the Gabba. Washington, like, who's that? Thakur. Like, I think he has a first-class batting average of 17. He came out and whacked 67 runs in a game-changing partnership. Yeah, well, it's 16. 16 and a half he bats at.
Wow, that's incredible.
And he's just come out and clubbed 67 runs in partnership with another debutant in Sundar, and that absolutely destroyed us.
Yeah, and they batted beautifully. They not only did they, it wasn't like they got to 60 by just like making ugly runs. They absolutely smacked them. Like, we had Mitchell Starc come on and try to bowl three or four over spells at 150 kilometers and rattle them. And they weren't. They were just ducking them, or they were pulling them, or they were knocking him down the ground. And yeah, they were awesome. I tell you what, I've just noticed here, Rahane was the only bloke to get 100 for the Indians. Like, and that was, they look like there's about 15 50s there. If a couple of them went on to get hundreds, they would have won this. They would have won this test series 3-1.
You're so right, actually. We had twice as many hundreds as them, albeit 2 versus 1, but 2, 4, 6, 7, 8. We had 9 50s. They had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They had 12. So, yeah, wow. They had people, like a greater breadth of people scoring runs. So I'll just pick a few others out. Shubman Gill now, 259 runs at 51.8, scoring at 60 runs per 100 balls. That kid is going to score some test runs.
He's a nice batter to watch, isn't he? I love him. I think I watched him in the Australian A versus India A series, and I was quite surprised I didn't play him early on, but he just looks comfortable at test level, doesn't he?
Oh, I was watching him in his, you know, in his first test innings. And it looked like he was in his 50th test on 80 at the time. It was just incredible. Like, let me just pull his profile up. He's 21 years old, and he's just stepped into test cricket. And it's not that they're cocky or anything. It's just that they're confident. So I'm not saying he's walking around like he owns the place. No, it's not that. It's that he's ready for test cricket. And that's got to be, I mean, I'm excited because his technique is beautiful to watch. He's attacking, tall, elegant. So there's plenty to like about him. Now, here's Chet Pujara, 271 runs at 33.9.
Yeah.
Strike rate of 29 and 350. So, look, he was effective at what he chose to do, no doubt. What do you make of those numbers, in particular the strike rate?
Yeah, I think that's his job, isn't it? I think what he wants, what they tell him to do is to bat the way you do and try to protect our Virat Kohli's, try and protect our Rahane. So, and to be fair to him, like I'm going back to some of his dismissals now. He could have easily averaged 100 this test series, but he got that many unbelievable balls from Paddy Cummins at 140 kilometres that angled into middle stump and decked away and took the top of off. And he was really, really unlucky. So he did his job at the end of the day, didn't he? He sort of took the shine off the ball. He got the bowlers tired, and Rahane and Kohli's and Rishabh's came in, and they faced a Paddy Cummins and Hazelwood and Stark that had already bowled 30 overs. That were cooked.
I think absolutely nailed it there. And as much as it was boring to watch, that's kind of the point. He enjoys that reputation, but also that role, because it enables the player at the other end to play with more freedom. Now, whilst that wasn't always true, like sometimes they were both scoring rather slowly for extended periods, I think the ultimate series result proves that he read it well. And also those numbers are a little bit raw, you know, sub 35 average, but 350s and eight knocks is pretty consistent. And also so is his crease occupation, 928 deliveries it took to get him out eight times. So he's facing 116 balls per innings,
yep,
just straight off the bat. So a highly effective cricketer. And like you said, without a couple of jaffers in there, who knows how many runs he could still be batting.
Yeah. Well, it was like that time they came out last time and he literally just batted the whole series. But
oh my God.
Yeah, if you go back, I'm sure if you go back, he would have got knocked over by Paddy Cummins three or four times from absolute pearlers of ball. So he was pretty unlucky, Puyar. Even though they're not great numbers by his career, I still think he did his job. He still took the shine off the ball and made it easy for the blokes coming in.
Spot on. Couldn't agree more. And then just one more for the batting. Rahane, 268 at 38, hit that one century, strike rate 47. So fine there. It was a good series for him, but it wasn't great. That 100 was spectacular, don't get me wrong. And that was defined, certain parts of the series. But how do you feel about Rahane?
Yeah, I think he had for his standards, he probably had an average series. I think that 100 that he got as captain was series defining. And the one thing I noticed about Rahane as well is that him taking over the captaincy, you could see that the players wanted to play for him more than they did for Kohli. When they did a screen back to when they were about to win the fifth test, and they were all looking at him and they were all coming out to the media saying, "We want to win for Rahane." And so they really, really do love him. So that's what I noticed, is that India played with a lot of fight and determination, and a lot of it was to do with his captaincy. They just love him.
I don't think you can underestimate just how well-loved he is. I'd say Virat would naturally command respect just due to his sheer abilities.
Yeah.
And he's a fairly authoritarian and large presence. But there might be a bit of an eggshell vibe as he is captain, because there's no one in the team that's going to be as good as him except maybe Gill. So there's that disconnect. Whereas Rahane, he strikes me as a man of the people, very gentle in as much as his natural nature, his as a person. But I think he showed some decent tactical nous, showed great leadership with that excellent 100. That was a critical innings. And yeah, they really did play well under him. So I suppose that's a question for, and we'll do an episode on the second test, India versus England, shortly. So maybe we'll dive into that a little more. I'll just quickly run through some of the bowlers and just get your opinion. So Ravi Jadeja, 7 wickets at 15, 2.8 and over, a wicket every 32 balls. He just continues to impress and annoy, doesn't he?
Yep. He's just, like we said before, he's so effective because he doesn't leave the stumps. He'll spin the odd ball, but a lot of them will just go straight on. So literally, if you miss one, he'll get a wicket. So I think you summed it up really well before, Dane, is that thank goodness Ashwin didn't play that last test, and thank goodness Jadeja only played 2 test matches, because if they, and then even Bumrah, Suraj, like they all played, none of the bowlers played 4 test matches. If they did, my goodness, India could have won 3-0 or 3-1. We just don't know.
Yeah. It might have been that, honestly, 3-1, definitely, because it's like, Bumrah, 11 wickets at 29. I mean, they're not his normal numbers, but I feel that's ill indicative. He always took wickets at crucial times and took big wickets, as he does. Now, Shardul Thakur came in, at, you know, on a hiding to nothing, the everything, Fortress Gabba, all that. Comes in, he's got a first-class bowling average of, a tick under 29. He bats at 16 at domestic level. And the little man comes out and thumps 67 in a critical partnership of 123 with Washington, taking the team from a wobbly 6-180 to comfortably into the 300s and then beyond with the momentum. And also takes 7 wickets for the match with his little sort of wobbly meds at 22, a wicket every 6 overs. Like, what an excellent debut and what an example of this Indian depth. I mean, he was maybe the fifth choice pacer when you look at the original three and then the replacement. And then he was like, the fifth in line, and he's come out and done that. Like, that's incredible, isn't it?
It is. It's pretty amazing numbers, isn't it? So I think, again, there's India's depth. We just didn't have that. We didn't have that depth. We didn't have the players to come in, and probably missing, it's probably that last test match, we looked like our bowlers looked like they were tired, and we probably didn't have that replacement. James Pattinson wasn't ready to go, and we just looked tired, where they constantly had people coming in doing the job.
Yeah, in a strange sort of way, the injuries and all of the associated absences were kind of the one blessing it offered after a long, tough, hot series, was that these lads were coming in fully energized, probably never expected to make their test debut, possibly ever, because a lot of them were white ball specialists, or at least were, certainly in Washington's case. So they're fresh and energized, and that kind of took us by surprise with our tired quartet of bowlers. It must have felt like they were running around on Red Bull and we were running around on, I don't know. But yeah, it was an incredible thing. And like, I suppose the one other major note, Mohammad Siraj, 13 wickets at 29, 2.85 and over, strike rate 6. I actually don't think those stats are as good as he played. He looked dangerous all the time.
Every test match, he almost became their spearhead after 3 test matches, didn't he? So
right?
I think he was awesome. I don't think he could have done much more.
It's incredible. He's just come in and it just automatically fitted in. Got a bit of attitude as well, which, in reflection, I kind of like. A bit of a top knot happening, a bit of a trendy. He should be very pleased with that series, and I think he has much more to give at test level. I know Ishant Sharma's back, and he's taken his 300th and stuff like that. So there's a natural order of things at the moment, but plenty of depth, plenty of excitement for India. So well done, India. Congratulations. And now we'll just quickly move on to the Stark thing before we close out this episode. So I just want to just run you some data and then just get your input, because you were a professional sportsman, and numbers can tell a story, but they don't tell the full story. So Mitchell Stark, so these are his career numbers. In the first match of a series, he has 97 wickets in 20 tests at 24, a wicket every 44 balls, so very good. In the second match of a series, he's played 17 tests. He takes 76 wickets at 24.8. Again, a wicket every 44 balls. And then from this point, so the third match of a series, 16 tests, 58 wickets at 31.7. However, when you remove the 2 pink ball tests he's played, in which were the third match of a series, it becomes 14 tests, 49 wickets at a tick under 34, and a strike rate of around, 60 balls per wicket. Fourth match of a series, he's played 5 tests, 18 wickets at 37, a wicket every 60 balls. And then the fifth match in a series, he's only played 3 tests, 6 wickets at 52.7, a wicket every 101 balls. Obviously, the Gabba would have blown that up. And it's a small sample of data, but on the surface of that, mate, does that sort of speak to any kind of pattern and anything you might change or implement to help Starkey?
I don't think I think personally, I think what that yells out to me is that he gets tired, he gets injured. Yep. And because first match of a series, he'll play 20 test matches and 17 and 16 and 5 and then 3. So what that tells me is that after the third test match, he normally gets injured or they pull him out because he's got a niggle. So
yeah, that's right.
I think it's one of them, mate, where you almost got to look at that as Cricket Australia and go, well, Starkey's probably not going to be our go in the fourth and fifth test matches. So do we play him for the first couple and just have someone sitting in the wings like a James Pattinson ready to come out? And I think what they're probably thinking now is that we probably didn't rotate the bowlers enough. Because like I said before, the bowlers look seriously tired in the fourth and fifth test matches, especially Hazelwood and Cummins. Like Cummins played and bowled so many overs. So I think they've got to look at it, mate. That's probably my view on it, is that he gets tired, he gets injured, and he becomes ineffective in the latter test matches. So what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, absolutely, and I agree. The only little caveat that I'll add is that the only teams we contest in four-match series and five-match series at the moment, at least in recent history, is India and England. So they're tougher opponents. But that said, that doesn't justify the numbers, because they fall off the deep end pretty much when we consider that, you know, bowling at 24 for the first two tests and then about 37 for the next three. That's pretty worrisome, and it says enough to me that we need rotation. The only thing I'm wary of is if it's Jimmy Pattinson, if it's Jai Richardson, if it's Michael Nessa that steps in for these Stark rotations, we need to give them enough continuity and exposure and like adequate time at the crease, if you will, so that they can get their career moving as well. We can't just sub them in for the one match and then get Stark back for the fourth test or something, you know, sub him out for the third. We need that continuity. So it is a complex scenario, but the evidence is clear. Something needs to be done. I'm just wary that you can't just plop Jai Richardson in for one test a series. And just so you know, Jai, no matter what you do here, you're out for the next one. That's not very conducive to him settling in and proper development for those that are on the periphery of making the 11. So it is complex, but I feel something needs to change. And just before we wrap up, red ball Stark versus pink ball Stark. And it's actually a little bit more worrisome than, you know, I thought it might be on the surface. So I'll just pull up Starkey's career numbers for now. And they're very good still. 61 tests, 255 wickets at 27, and a wicket every 49 balls. So that in particular, that sub 50 strike rate speaks to his effectiveness. Takes a wicket every 44 balls in the first two tests of a series. So that's exceptional at, 24 and a half runs and a wicket. But day test Stark is 53 tests, 209 wickets at 29 and a half, a wicket every 52 balls. And then day night test Stark, he's played eight of those, 46 wickets at 18.9. So there's a 10.6 run gap, and he takes a wicket every 36 balls in pink ball. So highly effective there. But when you sort of take the day nighters out and he's bowling 209 at a tick under 30, that's when things get, you know, in conjunction with his depleting performances as any series progresses, it starts to paint a picture that there is some masking within that average of 227 that upon further analysis, at least raw numbers, is a little bit worrisome and a little bit indicative of the fact that the people who have issues with Stark, they might not drill into numbers all day like I do, but this is probably what they feel in their gut, that he has his limits as a test cricketer with regard to how many tests he should play and indeed which tests he should play. What do you make of all that, the red versus pink?
It's one of them, mate. Like speaking to some of the boys that are playing in the pink night, pink day night test matches sort of things, is that with the pink ball, it gets softer. The seam sometimes dies on it, and it's really hard to bat. It's hard to sometimes see. The ball gets softer, so you don't get value for runs, and it swings a little bit more and swings for longer. So it'll make sense, I reckon, if you put every bowler's pink ball to red ball stats next to each other, they'll be a little bit different, but not that different, I think. So I think it's all one of them. Yeah, under the night sky, Stark bowling 150 kilometers with a wobble seam, with a soft ball, he's always going to do well. So, yeah, I don't know. I think Australia need to look at it. The selectors need to probably look at it and think, whenever there's a day-night test, we play him, and we probably play in the first one or two test matches of a series, and then we stop him because he gets too injured and he becomes ineffective. And then you might bring in a Jai Richardson or a James Patterson in for the rest of the series, and it almost just adds a little bit more of a difference to the Australian bowling attack.
Well, I think so, because I want to say straight off the bat that I love Mitch Stark, and I think
he
absolutely... Yeah, exactly, man. And I think we both agree that he absolutely is a central and fundamental and core and important part of our test future over the next 4 or 5 years. But now that he's 31, and now that these numbers have sort of done the rounds, I wasn't the first to extract them, but I did them my own way, and indeed included the pink stuff as well. It just opens a conversation about there is a better way to use him so that he can operate at full potential, because a lot of his effectiveness relies upon a certain level of fitness and freshness. And if he loses that, you know, you take 5% of his sting out of speed and gruff and confidence, that's significant for a player who takes wickets in the way he does. Paddy Cummins can bowl on a handkerchief for 4 hours and get natural variation. That's how he does, and that's why he's the best bowler in the world at the moment, and rightly so. Starkey takes his wickets a different way. He relies upon being fresh, being fast, and being ferocious. And there are ways in which to exploit that. He must play every pink test ever. And there are ways to better optimize his ability to perform like that, as per the numbers on his depleting numbers as the series progresses. So, I think for you and I and all cricket fans that love Starkey, we just want a conversation to be had and a system implemented so we can see the best of him, because the best of him is on par with anything we've seen in the last 30 years in terms of, you know, ferocious effectiveness. And that's about all. Like, do you have anything else to add on the Starkey situation?
No, not really. I think you summed it up there really well. I think I agree. I think there just needs to be a little bit more chat around how is he best used, and then we can go from there and start to work out what our best bowling attack looks like for the back end of a series.
Yep. And I mean, as India have shown, depth matters. You know, if 100%. Smudge got taken out for the series, Manus got taken out for the series, we were dead. Paddy Cummins or Hazelwood gets taken out, we're dead, because we have the talent on the periphery in the pace bowling department. Not so much the batting, that's another conversation. But they're all coming in cold, like proper cold. So I think the more test cricket they can play, even semi-regularly, get a feel for it. It'll be better for us in the long run, better for Stark. He'll enjoy his cricket more. And I think once he understands and gets over the fact that it's not a punishment, it's a management system so that he can get the best out of himself, then hopefully everything moves forward. But yeah, again, thanks for your time, mate, and congratulations, India. You should be very proud. I'll see you on the next one, mate.
Sounds good, mate. It's good to be back.
It is indeed. And thanks, as always, for your time and input, mate. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Dane. I'll speak to you soon, mate.
Very good. Cheers, mate.